As I mentioned at the outset before starting the lecture, I put the basics at the front in terms of the mathematical procedures. And also I put at the front certain issues related to image quality and information content. I have not seen such discussion in other books, but I feel this is important. The quality of image data that we acquire is important, because many image processing techniques, filtering and enhancement techniques are addressed to this particular problem or issue of improving the quality of the image. So the underlying assumption is that the image that you acquired originally is not of adequate quality. You need to do something to improve the quality. Noise is always present, and artifacts are present quite commonly in many images that we acquire. So we need to deal with that problem to begin with. And then there is the more important issue of information. What is information? What is the information content of images? How do you characterize and represent the information? There are a few different aspects of information. There are statistical measures of information. So if you were to just ask somebody off the street as to what is information contained in a particular image, they would talk about the content of the image in terms of the person and the table and the chair and so on. But mathematically, we talk about other measures of information. We will go through some of these aspects in this chapter. Characterizing the quality and information content of images is not easy. There are several measures and methods proposed in the literature. By characterization, we also mean quantification, to measure something. How do you measure quality? And that's very difficult, because quality is qualitative, it is subjective, and we want to quantify it. So how do you quantify something that is qualitative? That's a big issue there, and it's not easy. The same about information. Information content is also qualitative. It depends upon the application. It depends upon the domain. It depends upon the semantics. But then, staying away from all of those, you can define some measures of information content that are independent of the domain of application or the semantics of interpretation. So this is what we will look into in this chapter, to set up certain methods, certain procedures and principles that could be applied in the remaining chapters that we will see later on. So several factors affect image quality and information content. And before you can process an image to address these issues, we need to have a good understanding of such factors. How is the quality of an image affected during its acquisition, transmission, storage, and so on? And characterize the loss associated with these factors of quality and information. If you can do this, then you can design appropriate image processing techniques to remove the degradation inserted by some step and to improve image quality. So as I mentioned, the inherent problem in characterizing image quality is that judgment by human observers is a subjective exercise. A human being will describe quality in a very subjective manner. So we want to characterize that, and by characterize, there is a certain expectation of quantification. So to quantify the notion of image quality is a difficult proposition. And then, information has multifaceted characteristics. What is information? It depends. It could be statistical, and most of the measures that we will see are statistical. It could be structural, but that requires interpretation of the image. It could be perceptual. That depends upon the person who is doing the analysis. It could be semantic. That again depends upon the domain and the person who is interpreting it. And then it could be diagnostic, which in the medical application depends upon the domain of application and the expert who you consult. So information has these different characteristics. Quality and information could go hand in hand, but there are certain aspects of quality that are different from the notion of information. There are some difficulties in image acquisition and analysis that lead to compromises on quality and information that your image will contain. I've already mentioned and described some trade-offs, such as contrast. In electron microscopy, you need a trade-off between damaging the specimen and the contrast that you can get. Depth of penetration versus contrast. And the same in X-ray imaging. So when you perform this trade-off of one against another, there is a compromise on something. You lose one to gain something else. Some of the difficulties in image acquisition and analysis are, one, accessibility of the organ of interest. You need to access the organ of interest in the sense that you can apply your probing mechanism of X-rays or ultrasound or whatever it is you're using directly to that organ or as closely to that organ as possible to minimize the effect of the other surrounding organs. Now, several organs of interest in imaging-based investigation are situated well within the body and also are encased in protective and difficult to access regions. The brain is within the skull and the skull is there to protect the brain. But if you take an X-ray image, then the attenuation by the skull and the superposition of the image of the skull onto the image of the brain is a problem. It's hard to visualize. And of course, CT images, you separate the two and you can see the brain quite well with skull surrounding it. But if you take a planar image, you cannot see the brain. The prostate at the base of the bladder near the pelvic outlet is difficult to access because it is surrounded by the pelvis. You cannot take a planar X-ray image of that. And there are some special probes designed to overcome these problems. The visualization of arteries in the brain requires the injection of a coronographer. And for imaging of the prostate, there are special transrectal probes that are inserted through the rectum and then applied to the closer to the prostate, that is using ultrasound. But that is a semi-invasive procedure. And in some cultures, that may not be tolerated. And images obtained of these organs will have some artifacts associated with the way the probes are used and inserted and the limitations encountered. There is a certain amount of variability of information within a certain class. Now, biological systems exhibit great ranges of inherent variability within each category. When you have a manufactured product, you have, let's say, nuts and bolts and screws of different sizes. Because they are manufactured using machines, they will all be very close within a category. If you make screws that are 2 centimeters long, they will all be 2 centimeters long. There could be some broken pieces here and there, but the majority of them, or 99.9% of them, will be exactly as designed. And if you have another that is 2.5 centimeters long, then the two will be different in 99.99% of the cases. But if you take two biological systems, if you take a number of images of the heart of normal patients and a number of images of the heart of patients with cardiac problems and ask how close are these and how close are those, you will find that each group has a wide variability and the two distributions could very well overlap. There is always overlap between such distributions of biological samples. There is no clear-cut 2 centimeter and 2.5 centimeter nuts and bolts or screws in biological systems. The intrinsic and natural variability presented by biological entities within a given class exceeds the variability that we encounter in engineering and manufactured samples. The distinction between a normal pattern and an abnormal pattern is often clouded by overlap. In a manufactured sample, as I said, some broken pieces may exist, but they are outliers. There may be very few of them, but in biological systems, the overlap is significant between normal and abnormal categories, or categories A, B, C, D, E, whatever they are. So when you have multiple categories, the problem is compounded. It's even more difficult, and the overlap could be more. In addition, imaging conditions and parameters could cause ambiguities due to subject positioning and projection. Now, when you take a projection image, you encounter a certain reduction of the data and information, and some of the results could be misleading. Most malignant breast tumors are irregular and spiculated with finger-like protrusions, and most benign masses and cysts are fairly smooth and encapsulated in round or oval objects in 3D. But if you take a projection image of such objects, a round and smooth object is quite likely to project as round and smooth at almost any angle. You do not know, of course, within the breast where exactly and how exactly a tumor is positioned. But it is possible to imagine that a malignant tumor that is fairly rough in a certain view could project in a certain other view as a fairly smooth object. Depending upon the path of integration and projection, a rough object in three dimensions may project itself in a fairly smooth outline in some projections. And also the superposition of other structures in the breast or in any other part of the body may reduce the distinction in the boundary of such tumors. So a tumor may present a rough appearance of view in one projection, but a smoother profile in another, and that may create ambiguities. The notion of shape roughness is not specific. So what is rough and what is smooth? Smoothness is all right, smooth and round is okay, but the question of roughness, or the notion of roughness, is open-ended. You have a little rough and very, very rough and so on, and there is no end to that. If you quantify and say on a scale of 0 to 1 or 0 to 100, what is roughness, then you're putting a measure on it. Otherwise, it is vague. So overlapping patterns caused by ligaments, ducts, and breast tissue in other planes could also affect tumors and masses in projection images. And also, overlapping patterns could create the impression of a tumor that doesn't exist. Different details could overlap and present themselves in the integrated view in such a manner as to mimic an abnormal pattern, leading to a false positive diagnosis. Of course, a physician or a radiologist would get additional information to override such misleading data, but some of these additional techniques could cost the patient in terms of extra imaging situations, extra imaging modalities being applied, and perhaps a biopsy, which would involve the insertion of a needle into the breast to obtain a sample. The use of multiple views and spot magnification imaging could help resolve some of these ambiguities, but at a certain cost to the patient and the healthcare system. Physiological artifacts and interference could exist. Physiological systems are dynamic and active. The heart is beating always. If it stops, there is a serious problem. Some activities, such as breathing, may be suspended voluntarily for a short period of time by an adult who is in a good state of health. Whereas if you are taking a picture of an X-ray image of a child, you won't be able to ask the child to stop breathing even for a few seconds. The child cannot control his or her body to that same extent as an adult could. So in the case of pediatric subjects, the controls that you would expect an adult to have would not be applicable. But there are certain aspects, certain physiological activities that even an adult cannot control, such as cardiac activity, blood circulation, peristaltic movement, movement of gas and other things in the bowels, one cannot control. So typically you will be asked to do certain other or follow certain other procedures, not to eat or drink for so many hours before the examination and so on. But all of these still have certain limitations. So an analyst should pay attention to potential physiological artifacts when interpreting biomedical images. The effects of these other ongoing physiological activities on the image that you take. There are energy limitations when you apply probing radiation or mechanism. In X-ray mammography, you need to use soft X-rays. So a low KVP would be desirable to maximize image contrast. So I mentioned earlier it is 24 to 32 KVP or so. But low energy X-ray photons are absorbed more readily than high energy photons by the skin. So the skin dose would be higher if you use very low photon energy. And absorption of X-ray photons could cause some harm or some damage. So using low energy photons in X-ray imaging could cause increased radiation risk to the patient. Or you need a compromise between the two. Of course, as I said, very low energy X-ray photons are absorbed right at the source by using an appropriate filter. Patient safety is a concern. The protection of a patient from electrical shock, radiation hazard, and so on, I mentioned. I also mentioned about ethical approval, so let me skip that. I said that earlier. So let's go into characterization of image quality. In general, images are complex sources of information, and there are several items of information. There are many measures that are available to represent quantitatively several attributes of images. Now, an attribute of an image is not necessarily quality, but you could draw a link between certain attributes and certain impressions of quality. If you're able to derive some measures related to quality, even indirectly, representing certain aspects of quality, then you can analyze images for these various applications. Comparison of images generated by different imaging systems. Suppose you have to choose between X-ray machines from manufacturer A, B, C, D, E. You could take images of a phantom using each one and compare the images in terms of certain measures of quality and then decide which one to accept or buy. Comparison of images obtained using different imaging parameter settings of the same system. So given a system, what should be the parameters, the kilovoltage peak or milliampere second or whatever other parameter of that imaging system to obtain the best image? Comparison of the results of image enhancement algorithms. You have one input image, and suppose you have six different enhancement algorithms. Which output or which enhancement algorithm gives you the best image? To make that decision, you would like to have some measure of image quality. Of course, you could ask a specialist in the area and say, choose which one, and one may pick that, but somebody else may pick something else. So if you can have a quantitative measure, then you could rely upon it. The assessment of the effect of the passage of an image through a transmission channel or medium. So if you're transmitting through a lossy medium, if it is lossless, there is no problem. But if it is lossy, then which system or which parameters are the best? For example, JPEG uses different types of compression, different levels of compression. So which one is adequate? Which one is the best? The assessment of images compressed by different data compression techniques at different rates of loss. So that's what I mentioned just now. So those are the potential applications. So let's look at some parameters that arise from different approaches. So we'll start with digitization of images. So the representation of natural scenes and objects as digital images will require two steps, sampling and quantization. You have seen this in 1D signals in your signal processing course somewhere. And in images also, you have to do the same in two dimensions for sampling. and quantization is the same as in the 1D case. Both of these steps could lead to loss of quality and introduce artifacts, and we need to recognize that. So sampling is the process of representing a continuous time or continuous space signal on a discrete grid with samples that are typically separated by uniform interval or distance in space. Now in 1D, we know that a band-limited signal with a maximum frequency component of FM hertz may be represented without any loss by its samples taken at twice the rate that is known as the Nyquist rate based on Shannon sampling theorem. FS, the sampling frequency, is 2 times FM, the maximum frequency present in the signal. Now, this is in the case of 1D signals, where you know what is FM from other means, using an analog spectrum analyzer or something, or you have applied a band-limiting low-pass filter, removing everything that is not of interest beyond FM. Now, sampling may be modeled as the multiplication of the given analog signal with a, excuse me, with a periodic train of impulses. And we know also that the multiplication of two signals in the time domain corresponds to the convolution of their Fourier spectra. If you convolve two signals in the time domain, their spectra get multiplied. If you convolve in the time domain, or rather if you multiply in the time domain, you get convolution in the other domain. And if you remember from your signals and systems course, the Fourier transform of a periodic train of impulses is another periodic train of impulses. So when you have a series of delta functions in the time domain, which is periodic, the Fourier transform is also a train of delta functions in the frequency domain. The separation is 1 divided by delta t, or the frequency of that delta train. So the Fourier spectrum of a sampled signal is periodic because of the convolution of the band-limited spectrum of the original signal with a periodic impulse train. So wherever you have the impulse, you have a copy of the spectrum of the original signal, and the period of that repetition is FS, the sampling frequency. A sample signal has infinite bandwidth because it is periodic. But what is of interest is only that part up to FM, which is less than or equal to half the sampling frequency. So if you can extract the low-pass portion from this infinite spectrum, that is between plus and minus FM, and that has to be less than half the sampling frequency, then you can reconstruct the original signal. And that process is related to interpolation. If the signal is sampled at a rate lower than FS, then you run into aliasing errors, where frequency components get mixed up or translated to other frequency values, and you have an error that cannot be corrected. And that becomes a loss of quality, a factor that affects the quality of the signal. So if you do not sample adequately, then the signal suffers from aliasing errors, and it will not be possible to recover the original signal. Excuse me. So if sampled at least FS equal to 2 times FM hertz, the time domain signal, the original signal may be recovered from the sampled version by low-pass filtering, which is also interpolation. So you could use an ideal rectangular low-pass filter, or you could use some other low-pass filter. There is a distinction between what I said now in one-dimensional time domain signals and in image processing with two-dimensional signals that are functions of space, x and y. In 1D DSP, in order to prevent aliasing errors, we could use what is called an anti-aliasing filter. We know the sampling rate we are going to use. We know from experience the bandwidth of interest of the signal. So we could apply a low-pass filter whose cutoff frequency is less than, slightly less than FS over 2, half of the sampling rate. So this requires some prior knowledge that the signal contains no significant information or information of interest beyond that limit. And if you have the analog signal, before you sample, you apply the filter. But in image processing, you don't have that option in many cases, or in most cases. In most real-time applications of imaging and image processing, it is not possible to estimate the frequency content of the image. And it is not possible to apply an anti-aliasing filter. So you have your digital camera. You go and take a picture of a real-life scene. And you don't have any filtering. Now, you could blur the image by defocusing the lens intentionally if you put your camera on manual and you say, I want a smooth image, so you blur it. But how much that should be, you don't know, and you cannot control that specifically. So you cannot massage your image in order to prevent aliasing in most real-life imaging applications. You just sample it and take it for granted that you have sampled it well. Of course, experience will give us some guidelines after acquisition and processing of many images in a given pixels or pixel sampling resolution. And in medical imaging, that has been established. It is said that for mammography, you need a pixel size of at least 50 micrometers, as small as 50 micrometers. For chest imaging, 100 micrometers or 200 micrometers is enough. For imaging somewhere else, they say pixel size of 0.5 millimeter is adequate, and so on. But this is only by experience. There are some papers that I have read in the past as digital imaging made its way into medical imaging. There were some studies that said for normal chest images, a resolution of 200 micrometers per pixel is enough. But this is not good for disease A, B, C, D, E, F. It's difficult to use such information because when you have a patient coming in, how do you know if that patient has these diseases and which sampling resolution you should use? Is it enough to use for this patient a pixel size of 0.5 millimeter or should I use 100 micrometers per pixel? So such information, although could be available or made available in practice as rules of thumb. They're called rules of thumb because they don't have much theoretical background, but they are based on practical observation. They may be hard to apply. But the main distinction is this, that in 1D signal processing, it is possible to apply anti-aliasing filters before sampling, but in most 2D imaging applications, it is not possible. In fact, I haven't seen any. Has anybody seen any anti-aliasing filtering in images? I don't think so. But of course, when you undersample, you know what is going wrong. So here is my own picture. And this is 225 by 250 pixels. And I started cutting down 112 by 125 pixels, 56 by 62 pixels, 28 by 31. Obviously, at some point, the image becomes useless. All of them have 8 bits per pixel or 256 levels of gray. But this, of course, is simulation from an image that is already digital. I'm downsampling. But if you were to sample at 28 by 31 pixels from the original, you could expect something similar to this result.